the physical UFO contact of Robert P. Renaud to planet Corenda from the early 60s. Hear part 4 of summary on his contacts to one of the overseeing races or Earth's semi-physical guardian angels from planets so far technically developed, as we are above the technical, not spiritual, level of native tribes in remote areas. 1. Visiting their moon base December 3rd to 4th/1966. 2. Moon base visit on Friday the 28th of July 1967. Visiting their moon base, Elor, one of the space people, announced that they would land at Plato Crater, their moon spaceport. The ship passed over the rugged terrain of the moon, and they noted an occasional ground vehicle on the rough ground, flashing signals of greeting. They came to an immense ring area of Plato. An iris in the covering opened and they descended into a huge hangar. Vast rows of ships were in the expansive chamber. They glided over them and settled in an area as large as a football field, all inside and under cover, pressurized and warmed, and having increased gravity, about 90% of that of Earth, with about 16% natural gravity outside. They went down 8 floors by elevator, then down a corridor to the entry room to the ramp and stairway and out without stopping. The great new ship on its massive tripod landing gear curved out of sight in all directions, the polished hull now pitted and dull. Astra indicated that it was her first time on the moon, so they enjoyed it together. A small car pulled up. It was driven by Master Kalen Lee, who was already there to greet them. He drove to the far end of the hangar where a door opened into a long tunnel. Astra noted that one of the guards there was from a New England base. She had known him, Kerry Aldk, as an old schoolmate on Corenda. Then through a door and up a ramp to a level hundreds of feet higher and into a garage with many similar vehicles. Then into a reception room where they were given badges by a young lady. A security guard came in and they followed him through a corridor, then took an elevator to the top floor, and into a large room where they were welcomed into lunar control. The guard noted the two, Bob and Astra, his girlfriend from one of their Earth bases, holding hands, and excused himself, leaving them to wonder at the scene. The myriads of marvelous equipments for all their moon operations. Apparently all of the employees spoke English, for Renaud heard no Corendian. Later he heard Kalen Lee say something in Klingon. Next, they went into a beautiful room called the observation deck. Around the outer rim was a 10-foot-high window, looking out on the moon's surface. The sun was low on the western horizon, casting strange shadows on the floor of the crater. From their elevated level they could see most of the floor of Plato. It is about 700 miles from the North Pole. In the southern star-filled sky, Earth shone down on them, an azure ball of subdued radiance in the sunlight. They watched it in perfect peace. Renaud is a true poet, but this is only a summary of his full report. Into the car again and they retraced their route to the tube room where many of those odd vehicles were stored, short tube-like carriers for several passengers, with an entrance at the side. They were propelled along tunnel tubes by ring magnets in the tubes. A crane brought one of the carriers to the loading platform. They, with Orival, Kalen Lee and others got in and were moved into the tubular tunnel. They knew when they were moving by the lights above them. The vehicles had rollers recessed into the casing, but traveled as on air, being supported by the propulsive power, having about an inch of clearance all around. In transit the tube would be evacuated and sealed to reduce friction, even of the air. Their destination was the crater of Hipparchus, Base 2, with the optical and electric telescopes, nearly 1,000 miles to the south. At their destination, the car was unloaded and the group were all introduced to three men, the commander, the controller, and the security officer of the base. They proceeded to the upper levels and the wonderful telescopes above. Here extract from his adventures on his 2. Moon base visit on Friday the 28th of July 1967, well, you think it seems unbelievable. But why should he invite such wild stories, he knew would be ridiculed. If he actually didn't went through it, here they are underground in the base and was to take a trip on some hover scooter-like vehicle. Next, by car to a sort of garage and repair shop, where there were many single-person vehicles like motor scooters without wheels, resting on a flat plate on the bottom. They then dressed for outdoor travel in lightweight space suits, complete with air tanks and recirculating purifiers. Bob donned his suit and in 2 minutes had fastened the ceiling strips. The light helmet had a large visor allowing a wide range of view. Altogether it may have weighed 10 pounds, plus 6 pounds for the power and air pack. Earth or moon weight? Orival switched on the air conditioner for Bob and activated the suit communicator. His voice would operate the necessary controls. The men's suits were gray and red, Lin'Airy had one of light blue and Astra's was a bluish pink. Each selected a scooter and sat down on it. There were three switches, which were closed in sequence. The first started the stabilizing gyroscope, the second activated the flotation grid, which caused the scooter and rider to rise and hover about 6 inches from the floor. The third switch activated the propulsion, which was controlled by a foot pedal, making it simpler than driving a car. I believe it had handlebars for guiding, though it may have simply tilted for curves. They moved toward a small elevator, which rose with them, until they were about 10 feet below the surface, stopped, and an iris opened above them. Then they rose until the platform was flush with the ground level and, as they left, it dropped out of sight and the iris closed. It was so well camouflaged that it could scarcely be detected. It was Bob's first time out in the open. The sun was in the lower eastern sky and the shadows were pure black. He climbed off his scooter and stood on the surface of the moon. It crunched under his feet like fine sharp gravel. The low gravity enabled him to stand with no effort at all. He picked up a big rock, which should have weighed over 10 pounds and threw it upwards some feet and it descended slowly, as in a slow motion picture. It landed a number of feet away, bounced off another rock some 10 feet and landed in a small puff of dust, which settled back promptly, but he could feel no trace of atmosphere. It would not be breathable, but might be capable of carrying dust some distance. The party saw a rather large meteoroid hit the ground and hurried to the spot. It was only 3 or 4 inches in diameter, but it had blasted a crater about 14 feet wide and several feet deep at the center. It showed 6 to 8 inches of granular stones and pebbles, then the ground became hard and dense and was solid rock at a depth of about 2 feet. There were many large and small craters, some were elongated gouges, indicating a low trajectory. The horizon seemed very close. Earth was visible hanging about halfway to zenith in the southern sky, for Plato Crater is about 700 miles from the North Pole. It looked like a bluish half-moon, glowing brilliantly in the sunlight. On the dark side one could almost see the lights of the largest cities, like specks of fire in the darkness. Flashes of light signified a large electrical storm. Some later when they entered a large underground cavern, which harbored a kind of old underground city, they stopped at the mouth of a large tunnel and entered, using their laser lights in the dark interior. They went as far as they could on their sleds and walked about 3 minutes more, coming to a large cavern in which, eons before, a small town had been built. It had been preserved perfectly though its age must have been in millions of years. We cautiously navigated the narrow stairway to the ground level 30 feet below the tunnel entrance, and headed down what appeared to be the main street. The buildings were remarkably well preserved, with only an occasional crack, missing masonry, or crumbling mortar to be seen. There was nothing ornate about the architecture, everything was simple and quite plain, without embellishments. It seemed as though this place had some very business-like purpose, rather than being merely a settlement. Master Kalen Lee, one of the Corunda men at the moonbase, began a commentary on our surroundings. This establishment has been determined to be a sort of base, a headquarters for a race of aliens who arrived on the moon millions of years ago. They were treated as gods by the backward natives of the moon, who constructed this section as a temple to use during their stay. Due to its underground location, it is the only remnant of a mighty atomic war which broke out between the aliens and another group of highly advanced primitive natives who had their main city in the area that is now the crater Copernicus. This race took offense at the ingress of the aliens into their domain, and demanded their withdrawal or face annihilation. The aliens refused to leave and defied the Lunarians to do anything about it, without themselves being obliterated. Things reached a stalemate, and remained so for some 10 years, Earth time, during which time both sides stockpiled great reserves of weapons of ever-increasing power and sophistication. Finally, the Lunarians made a sudden mass attack on the alien base outside on the surface, almost destroying it. They did not know of this undersurface headquarters or it would not be here today. From various points surrounding the main Lunarian city, missiles were launched at it, each one bearing lithium bombs. They met in mid-air and exploded simultaneously, in the most awesome blast one can conceive. The lunar city was instantaneously vaporized, and the explosion blasted out the crater that exists that today is Copernicus. It had another effect much more deadly, however. Our computers have placed the odds at over 50 million to 1, after much computation on available data. Nevertheless, the blast acted as a trigger, which ignited the very atmosphere that surrounded the moon. In a short blistering flame, the very atoms of the air were converted into pure energy, of an intensity too staggering to estimate. This wall of fury spread like a huge ripple from the center of the blast, and in less than a minute it had completely encompassed the moon. In its wake was total devastation. All organic forms had been seared to ash, without exception. Plants and animals alike had been reduced to almost nothingness. The buildings, the vehicles, and all the rest of man's artifacts were vaporized or simply pulverized into dust by a shockwave which defies description, a heat into millions of degrees, and radiation levels in the billions of roentgens. It was over in a few moments. The surface of the moon had been stripped of its life and constructions. In their place was a bleak, arid wasteland, slowly cooling in the absolute cold of vacuous space. This town is all that remained. It escaped the wall of fire that wiped out the rest on the surface. However, the radiation killed everyone and everything in this cavern instantly, and the air rushed out into the now airless outside. All was still for a while. Then the effects of the blast began to rock the moon. Earthquakes, volcanoes, and internal shifts predominated in shaping the surface into what is seen today. Long since dead now, the surface still bears the scars of the greatest tragedy of all time. One may find residual radiation from that catastrophe, in the rocks and soil, as a reminder of the futility of war. I might add that all that I have said has been determined from records found in this city, which record even the final moments of life, and the hell on earth that ended it so suddenly. On this moonbase visited also happened a conflict with a small group from planet Gulran that had teleported themselves into the base from bigger ships and intending to do some kind of sabotage there. These Gulrans apparently vowed to remove the cosmic police so they can do what they want on Earth. About this rebel, enemy planet Gulran in next part.